Welcome to Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. I'm Stella Fong. In this show, we hunt for the elusive morel mushroom. Trevor McFerrin takes us down by the Yellowstone River in Billings, Montana, to share some of his secret mushroom patches. We then take the morels to executive chef James Honecker at Bistro Enzo, who instructs us on how to prepare them. Let's begin with finding out how McFerrin started hunting morels.
It's fun. I'm always out fishing, and you come across something like that, they're good eating, and a lot of times if I see them, I'll quit fishing and pick mushrooms.
It is a beautiful May day. The sun is out, the wind has finally stopped, and it has been raining for weeks. Trevor, why are you choosing this time of the year to go out, or why these conditions?
Well, with these mushrooms, it's always around Mother's Day when you find them. And it depends on conditions too. If the moisture's right and the temperature's right, you're guaranteed you're gonna find them on the river. You just have to get out and hunt.
Do you wait for the snow to actually go away?
Yeah, I do wait for the snow. There has been years to where it's gotten warm like this, and then we had a snow, and I actually went out and found them in the snow too.
So it is the secret really waiting for the moisture to come and then some sun?
Yeah, the secret is pretty much the moisture and the temperatures.
So it helps to have the sun out.
It does help. Generally, I like to hunt in the morning when the morning sun's coming up. I went out a few nights ago in the evening, and with the glare and all the shadows of the evening sun, it made it really hard to find them. We actually didn't find any until the sun went over the horizon, and then we started seeing them and picking them on the way out.
With good lighting and good eyes, McFerrin assures us we will find mushroom. The proof is in his history.
How much have you harvested so far this year?
Just last week, I think I just over 40 pounds, actually. I've been averaging 5 pounds a day all week long.
But before you go out, make sure you are following the rules and regulations.
And does one need a permit to hunt for morel mushrooms?
Not yet.
But I think that you do need a permit if you go into the national forest, is that correct?
Yeah, anywhere like that, you're always going to want to check and see if you need permits and follow their rules, because there are areas that are protected and you're not allowed to remove stuff from those areas.
Well, the reason I found you was because I contacted Executive Chef James Honecker at Bistro Enzo, and he referred me to you. How long have you been supplying him?
Off and on, maybe 4 years I've sold to him. Last year wasn't a real good year, so I don't think I even went in there last year. But he's a really nice guy, and he was one of the main guys I was selling to when I started picking all these mushrooms. I just called around to the local restaurants, the nicer restaurants with chefs, because I knew that they used them.
Well, they're certainly a delicacy, these mushrooms, because they have the crevices that I think that just hold all the sauces that the chefs put on them.
They are really delicious, and to me, they don't taste like a normal mushroom like you would get, say, on a pizza from a pizza place. They're more of a nutty flavor because it burns out way. You know, this year when we first started finding them, right on the edge of the gravel trail, they started popping up in this gravel. And that's when we kind of knew they were starting to pop up, and then we would branch out and start to look harder for them. But I wouldn't be surprised if we find one here anytime now, because on both sides of here, I have found lots of them.
How long do they stay vibrant? Do they disintegrate after a while?
Yeah, I'd say after a week, they start to deteriorate a little bit. If it's real windy out, they tend to dry out quicker. But I have noticed that a lot of the chefs don't mind if they're a little bit dry, and they prepare them in different ways, I guess.
Well, in some ways, it probably concentrates the flavor of the mushroom.
Yeah, and I have read that that's one of the best ways to cook them is to dry them and then reconstitute them and then cook with them, because it brings out way more flavor.
And you're looking along the gravel area. Is it because water tends to concentrate along this area?
The shadier side of the trail tends to stay a little more moist, you know, but I found them on both sides of the trail. They're a real different mushroom. I mean, you'd be surprised where you find them. I mean, I've literally found them everywhere. I've went and looked in places thinking, oh, there's no way there'll be some here, and you find a pound there, you know, so don't limit yourself. Look absolutely everywhere.
Does a burn area actually help you find more mushrooms?
You know, it does. A few years back, there's an island that burnt down by Huntley, and it was just covered with mushrooms from end to end. And I believe what causes that is it's a sterile ground from the fire, and they just love that. there was a fire in Missoula, I think 4 years ago, and they actually put in the paper for everybody to go out and pick them because there was just so many, just a field from end to end full of morels.
Have you found that in general, when you're hunting for mushrooms, that most people are fairly competitive? Do you become territorial?
I don't. You know, you'll still see people. I try to be friendly with everybody. I mean, it's a big area, and I'll go and visit with them and talk to them. There are some people that try to be real secretive. I ran into a guy hunting the other day. I seen him off in the woods, and then all of a sudden he just disappeared. I think he was just hiding from me.
He didn't want to reveal his secret spot.
No, but I mean, they were everywhere where we were at, and there was enough for both of us, so. But generally, most mushroom pickers I've run into around here are real friendly, real nice, and helpful. You know, what I've seen with these mushrooms is, like, say today we find a big patch. We can come here next year, the same exact conditions, and there will not be any in the exact same spot. It seems like it takes 3-4 years for them to come back around. You kind of want to hunt the same area, but never the same spot. Because they don't come back in the same spot every year.
Well, it keeps you on your toes, I think. It makes that hunting even more interesting.
Yeah, and you have to go out and look. A lot of people go out and look, and they'll spend a half hour and not see any and just think they're not growing. I spent an hour before I even found the first one. And it seems like once you find that first one, I don't know if your eyes get better at spotting them, but you can kind of follow that, and you just kind of get in that mushroom mode, and you start finding a lot of them. I'm sure some are looking at us right now. We just can't see them.
As morel mushrooms watch us walk by on the established trails, McFerrin provides tips on how to be best prepared. Right now, you are wearing a pair of waders, and why is that?
I'm wearing the waders this year because I went to a spot a week ago, and I looked down, and I had literally 15 ticks crawling up each leg, and I maybe threw 10 out of my car on the way home, and then found another 10 when I got home, and after that, I just said I'm done with the ticks. I don't like them crawling on me, so I'm wearing waders the rest of the mushroom season.
Well, it's a good precaution to take because I did lather up with just a little bit of insect repellent before we left the car.
I usually just bring a bag from the grocery store. A lot of people bring a net bag because of the spores. I'm not real sure the morel spores like other mushrooms. To me, if they spored, you would find them in a different area every year. I think it's more of a bacteria or a decay in the ground that they like to come out of, maybe a tree root that's getting old and rotten under the ground. But everyone has their own opinion on what they're like. They're a real peculiar mushroom. It's really tough to cultivate them indoors. It's why you have to find them in the woods.
When you say net bag, is it to release a spore so that you're not trapping them?
Yeah, that's what they say. And all other mushrooms do release spores, but I really don't think the morel spore like lots of other mushrooms. I think it is something that's in the ground.
Is there a false morel?
There is a false morel. I haven't seen any in Montana. I think they grow kind of more east of Montana. They are stinky, and it looks like a mutated morel, a false morel. They're like an orange or red color. It doesn't look natural.
I can see how one could get lost. Whoa, look! Right.
Oh, there we go.
There.
Yep. See, that's how it works.
I saw a cluster of 6 mushrooms that have sprouted from the ground.
I mean, these mushrooms are literally 6 inches off the trail. There's another one out there. You can see that they kind of trail out. So we'll pick these and look around here real good for 10 minutes, and we'll probably do all right.
And Trevor was absolutely right, because once we focused in on that one mushroom, he's now pointed out another one. There are other ones that are in the forest, so we will go and look.
And here you can see it grew. It was under the debris. It's not popping up real tall, so it's kind of folded in half. And it's one of the bigger ones, like I said, that get trapped under the grass.
Yeah, it almost looks like the size of a walnut. So Trevor's gotten out his plastic bag, and we're just going to go over there and harvest some of these.
Whenever I pin down to pick the mushrooms too, once I squat down while I'm picking it, I'm scanning the area around me because I'm lower to the ground and it's kind of easier to spot them. So when you bend down and picking them, just kind of glance around and you can usually spot the next couple you're going to pick right after that. And generally what I like to do, a lot of people will say they cut them and they grow back, but I've cut them and they don't grow back. The stem might stretch out an inch in the next few days. But I'll kind of pop them out of the ground, and I like to break all the dirt off them. I try to give them to the chefs as clean as possible.
So you pretty much go down, you break off at the stem. You're not using a knife or anything like that.
No, they're so brittle to where I don't like using a knife. And then you just run the risk of cutting yourself too. So, I mean, it's real simple just to break them and clean them with your hands. They're always real nice and cool, almost like a clammy kind of feel to them when they're fresh. When they're drier, you can tell right when you pick them. They get lighter, they're real light, and they're just crispy.
And they have a hollow stem, is that correct?
Yeah, the morel, the whole mushroom, is hollow.
What do you do with the bottom part of it?
Generally, I just throw the bottom part back on the ground. I seen a guy on YouTube that saved the bottoms, and he blended them all up and then sprayed them in a garden in his backyard, and nothing ever happened. And then 4 years later, there wasn't any in the garden, and his whole yard was full of them.
Oh, I see more. Yes, like over there.
Yep, good eye. Good eye.
I'm with the best teacher.
Oh, that's a good patch.
I actually only saw one. Is there a patch?
Yeah, there's three or four over there, and there's some nice hogs. Them are some real big ones right there. Them are nice.
So when you say hogs, what does that mean?
That's what I refer to as a big mushroom. Sometimes you'll come across a patch, and they're just big, the size of baseballs. I've found quite a few this year that were 5-ounce mushrooms.
That's incredible.
Yeah, a pound adds up really quick. These are all blondes. I'm sure we're going to stumble into some grays in here, though. It seems like I find more grays in the woods than the blonde mushrooms. But you'll find them both.
And the blonde mushrooms actually have more, I'm going to say it's like a khaki, more beigey type of tone to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, kind of like a tan, almost like a military tan or file cabinet tan or something like that. Yeah, this is a great area. And next year, you're going to want to come back right here and look again. But I guarantee if you do, there will not be some in the same exact spot. It's so, so frustrating. This is a gray right here. This mushroom is what they call the gray. They tend to not get quite as big. There's another one there. They taste the same. It's just a different variety of morel. You have the blondes and the grays. Oh, there's another one over there. Boy, we got a good area here. This is going to work out nicely.
And Trevor is right, because all of a sudden my eyes are coming into focus, and just in my spot that I'm standing by this tree, I see about 6 of them.
Yeah, it's weird. Once you bend down and start picking, they just kind of pop out everywhere. This area here is calling my name. It's real moist. It's shaded. There's a nice deer trail to walk to look for them. It looks like a good area. Lots of decay on the ground. I think we have a good chance in here. I found 2 here. They're the grays. These ones are really hard to spot. I almost walked right past them. They blend in so well.
They are quite well camouflaged. And the good part about this one is it looks like the light is actually highlighting these.
Yep, or we wouldn't have seen them at all. If the beam of sunlight wasn't on these, I probably would have walked right past them. And again, these are right on the trail, 6 inches off the trail. If you do pick one and there's a hole on the cap, you kind of want to look in there, because once in a while you'll find a bug in there. And you can usually shake them and see if there's a bug in there. But that's just how it goes with wild mushrooms. You know, you're going to have to clean them before you cook them anyway, and you're going to find a bug here and there. But that doesn't mean they're bad at all.
This has been the best morel hunt I have ever been on. However, McFerrin shares one last secret.
My favorite time to pick is when it's actually raining, because nobody goes out, the mushrooms are great, and you get them all for yourself.
After a bountiful harvest, this is what McFerrin discovers to be the most difficult.
Now the hard part, leaving the area and trying to get them all, I'm not wondering if you left any behind.
There's always tomorrow, isn't there?
Yep.
While the rains continue and the temperatures stay cool, there will be many more morel tomorrows for Trevor McFerrin. I am forever grateful to him for being so generous with his secrets. Please come back to the second half when we learn how to prepare the mushrooms we found. Welcome back. Let's join Chef James Honaker in the Bistro Enzo kitchen to hear how he cooks morel mushrooms.
So the dish we're going to do is a very simple dish. It's a very classic dish. We're going to change it a little bit because normally it would be put over something like, if it was American, maybe grits or maybe polenta. Could be like a tartine of bread. And we're going to toss it with a little bit of angel hair pasta, which is a dish we've been doing recently whenever we have morels. And it lightens up the dish a little bit because a lot of times the classic morel dishes are a little bit heavy because they have cream in them, or heavy by today's standards. So we're going to lighten it up a little bit with some really nice angel hair pasta from Decheco, which is available, believe it or not, in Billings. So preparing the morels, these are river morels. There's also forest morels. River morels tend to be a little bit sandy. These are pretty nice, but we're not going to take any chances. So you also want to make sure morels can have bugs in them. And you don't want to be cooking, halfway through cooking, and see a large quantity of insects crawling out of the pan, which has happened before. So what I'm doing is halving the morels, or in the case of the smaller morels, you can just either look in the bottom of the stem, or cut off a little bit of the stem and look in the bottom, just to make sure there's nothing crawling around. See, there's a bug right there.
But you're cutting the stems off and discarding them, actually.
You don't have to cut the stems off, but I'm doing it because A, these have some mud on them, and B, I'm trying to look at the inside the morels. But basically, no matter what you do, if you don't clean them well enough, it's going to be gritty and kind of inedible. So I'm going to soak them just a little bit, make sure I agitate them in cold water, make sure that I get all the sand or any kind of grit out of them.
It is really amazing to see the variety of mushrooms that he has. We have both the large ones and the tiny ones, and we have a mixture of the blonde and gray mushrooms that we picked out yesterday. And already within about 26 hours of us harvesting the mushrooms, they're a little crumbly on the outside. So they're not as robust and I would say as vibrant as they were yesterday when we first picked them.
So these have now been washed, agitated a little bit in cold water. And you can look at the bottom of the, as you strain them, you can see there's a little bit of grit in there, which you wanted to get out. In my experience, river morels, as opposed to forest morels, they require a little bit different kind of cleaning. Forest morels are more likely to have insects.
Aside from insects and sand, Honecker cautions the mushroom hunter to watch out for the following.
And there's also a psychotropic morel that is available around here. However, it's pretty dangerous, and you can't really make a mistake because they look very different, similar but different. And the smell is completely, you wouldn't want to eat them if you smelled it. I've only seen the false morels once. I never knew what they looked like, and there's no chance of making a mistake with morels. They smell like a formaldehyde or something like that. But they don't smell good. And they don't really look like morels, although they do have a conical shape.
We now know about false morels, but how do we best keep the good ones?
How to store morels. You know, lots of times when you get morels in, especially from local pickers, it'll be after a rainstorm. And because morels like moisture, so they come in wet. What you don't want to do is seal them in a package. You want to spread them out in a single layer, or pretty much a single layer. Don't cover them with plastic, just cover them with a cloth, cover them with a parchment paper, and just let them dry out a little bit. They can definitely last for a week.
Now, let's join Honecker at his cutting board.
And like I said, this is classic. This is we're gonna do it shallots, garlic. Oftentimes we'll add a little bit of either pancetta or bacon. You'd start with that if you're gonna do that. Sear it off a little bit, and then add the shallots and garlic.
After all the chopping has been completed, we move over to the stovetop.
So I have some water boiling for the pasta, and I have a saute pan, which is almost warm enough for the shallots, which we'll start. A little bit of olive oil, could be butter, could be a combination of the two. So you need to soften up the shallots and garlic, sliced fairly thinly so that the garlics aren't in huge chunks. Salt and pepper. It's important to salt and pepper each step of the way so that you're not trying to add all the seasoning at the end. So we're softening these up. I'm gonna add a little bit of, this is raw asparagus. You could also blanch the asparagus if you wanna make it simple on yourself. And in restaurants, you always wanna try to make it simple. So this would already be pre-blanched, parboiled asparagus. But in this case, we're going to saute it with the shallots and garlic. And we're going to wait a minute. Now, I have some just sprigs of thyme. Normally, I'd tie them up in any kind of larger quantity. But since this is a small quantity, you can either pick them, leaves off, or you can just pick out thyme sprigs as you when they're finished. So you have a choice of alcohols with Morels. The classic thing to do would be port or brandy or maybe sherry. I personally like sherry. This is a Sandemann medium dry Amontillado sherry. Slightly sweet. Doesn't take very much. So we're basically deglazing the pan with that. A little bit of white wine because you don't want to do straight sherry. It'd be very strong. And we'll reduce that just a moment. We're at the point where the Morels can go in. You can also saute the Morels and deglaze afterwards. If you're going to simmer it for a little bit because they need to cook through. Also, if you've rinsed Morels or if they've come in with a lot of rainwater, they're going to exude a lot of moisture. That means you have to reduce it just a little bit more. It's just water. The Morels, you know, when they're soft, they're ready to go. But 5-6 minutes. But you could simmer them for 20 minutes or 30 minutes, depending on how much extraction you have or what dish you're doing. These are pretty good. A couple of those were really large Morels, so they're going to take a little bit longer. And you could also and or lemon zest to brighten it up a little bit. Now, I have a combination of veal and chicken stock, which we use in the restaurant. You could just do veal stock, or you could just do chicken stock. Now we're going to reduce that a little bit, and then we're going to finish it with cream. But you could also finish it with butter. And I think if it was a dish with pasta, I think it's pretty nice with cream. I mean, it's old-fashioned, but that's okay. This isn't about creativity. This is about making a traditional dish and trying to do a good job. You could also finish it with butter. Monte with butter, soft butter, instead of cream, which isn't that much lighter, but it looks lighter, and it's, I think it fits better with certain dishes, like a polenta, like a grilled tartina bread, the old-fashioned thing, puff pastry.
Morels are prized in the chef's world. Here are the reasons why.
You know, it's just one of the seasonal things. They have a distinctive flavor, that's for sure. But it's also a seasonal thing that even though there are dried Morels that you reconstitute and there are frozen Morels, you know, it's why, for instance, you use asparagus and Morels, why that's a classic dish, because they're in season at the same time. They have an affinity for each other, but they're in season at the same time. And so that's what we're doing today. I love the flavor of Morels, and they're versatile because this is just going to be a dish with pasta, Morels by itself, with some asparagus. But Morels in chicken, that's a classic dish. Morels in certain kinds of fish, I think it's more of a white fish, like halibut, that's classic. And, you know, you could do it with beef or veal.
Then, when asked if he would serve Morels raw, Honecker responds.
I wouldn't. I don't think there are a number of mushrooms that need to be cooked because you have some kind of a reaction to them, like lobster mushrooms, which the first time I tasted them, like a stupid 25-year-old cook, I decided I had to taste them raw. That didn't work out for me, but I felt like a sponge for 3 days. But anyway, I don't think Morels would hurt you raw, but I think they need to be cooked. So I'm going to add just a little bit of sugar, and we're still reducing it.
With Morels, sherry, wine, and cream reducing in the pan, what is Chef Honecker actually looking for?
Texture. So you don't want to add a ton of cream. In that case, you have to reduce the alcohol and the veal and chicken stock so that it's a little bit syrupy before you add the cream, so that you don't have something very watery or runny, or you add so much cream that it's just basically cream and Morels. And this cream we're using, it's 40% butterfat, which is, they call it manufacturer's cream, which I think starts at 34%. This is Dairy Gold, and it's pretty good. Other than they put it on the commercial ones, they put a little plastic screw top on it, which is incredibly annoying, but they don't care what I think. So in terms of, you know, maybe it's one part cream to two parts of the other liquid. And this cream won't break because it's all fat. So, and the other thing is, if you use a lighter cream, well, you'd want to reduce it more. That's basically if it less butterfat. Now, some cooks, like the sous chef in the restaurant, likes to add a little bit of raw alcohol at the end. Yeah, that's okay. You could do that if you like a sherry or if you like port. just add a few drops at the end because it gives it a rawness that a lot of cooks like. In the old days, they wouldn't have done that, but a lot of things that we do now, they didn't do the back. And then this is the Checo pasta. Angular pasta takes 2 minutes to cook, so there's no reason to parboil it or to cook it beforehand and then shock it. But in a restaurant, you'd do that because you just don't have enough space. Well, in some restaurants, in this restaurant, we do that because there's just not enough space to do it properly. Plus, the 2 minute cooking time, it can't be 2 minutes and 40 seconds. It can't be 1 minute and 30 seconds. It's got to go fast.
Aside from pasta, what would you suggest that you serve with this sauce?
Well, if you have some great asparagus, like right now, beautiful asparagus, just cook that. You grill it or boil it in heavily salted water. And, you know, that'd be just a nice, simple, classic dish. Georges Blanc, a chef from France, three-star chef, years ago had a dish that, where he'd stuff the morels and then roast them. That sounds complicated to me, but anyway, it was a beautiful dish. And okay, here we go. So I'm just reheating our Checo Angel here because it's already been blanched. So you reheat it for 10 seconds because it's so fine. Drain it really well because you don't want to add water sauce. All right, there we go. Now a bowl. We can always sell out morels. This dish will sell 25 or 30 of them a night, which is all the morels we ever have anyway. So, let's see. Now, a way to garnish it, yeah, you could put some Italian parsley chopped or like shaved Parmesan. That'd be nice.
In watching Chef Honecker prepare our mushroom dish, his years of skills with knife, fork, and cooking are evident. So let's listen to his advice to young cooks coming onto the scene.
I tell cooks oftentimes, and I mean it to some degree, that creativity is a sin. You should only be creative after years of experience, not just because you're a creative person and you have a year or two of cooking experience. That's not enough. You need to have more of a background, and then you can evolve a dish or have an idea that makes sense. But you know, in cooking school, you should just be learning your craft and not being creative. That's my opinion, but I'm old and mean, so that's the...
And you are entitled to your opinion, and the dish itself, it looks elegant. I don't believe it's just a simple dish, but it is a dish that's combined ingredients of the season, and I can smell it, has a real rustic aroma to it, and it looks beautiful.
Yeah, it's a nice pasta, and you could easily, I mean, this you could cook for 4 or 6 or 8 people without very much effort, and it's something really special. And you know, morels are, I've heard it's a really a great year for morels around here. You know, you don't have to find them yourself, although I don't know of anybody who actually markets them here. They do in the western part of the state, and those morels are a little bit different.
Well, Chef Honecker, thank you so much for teaching us how to use the harvest of this season.
Well, thank you.
The recipe for Chef Honecker's Morel Asparagus Sherry Cream Sauce over Angel Hair Pasta can be found at ypradio.org. Now, join me at the table for a taste.
I'm taking a bite. There's definitely a high yum factor to this. This is absolutely delicious. And when you bite into the mushrooms, every crevice is filled with this wonderful, rich sauce. And the asparagus that goes along with it is the perfect pairing for these mushrooms.
May morel mushrooms always be plentiful on your plate. Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region, has been produced with the assistance of Ken Siebert. Music is by Parker Brown. For more information about this program, go to ypradio.org. I'm Stella Fong.